Cindy and I have lived on this island for over 25 years now. Many of our friends are artists, visual, musical, theatrical, architectural, literary. It is a community that is both artsy and fartsy. I'm Jeff Hoyt, this is Hoytus Interruptus. When you live in a place long enough, you see your friends begin, peak, and conclude entire creative arcs in their careers. And hey, that's what artists do, right? Change, grow, evolve. And it's a reminder that life is lived in stages and chapters and phases, replete with cutaways and interruptions and pivot points. In a previous episode, I talked about pivot points, those moments in life when we plant our foot and step off in a different direction, for whatever reason. Sometimes we pivot at the scariest possible moment, because while things might be moving forward, maybe it's all going too fast, or not fast enough, or not in a way that feels healthy or sustainable. And so we change direction. And often we look back to that pivot point and realize that much of the good that spun out of what happened next could be traced back to that single moment. When I met my friend Chris Ballou, he was in the middle of the second act of his own musical narrative. In Act One, he hit it big and quick with a Seattle rock band, got signed to a major label with all the trappings of a rocket ship ride to stardom. When I met Chris, he was done with all that. He had left the rock star life behind and was finding great joy in writing and performing music for young children. He made 19 albums as Casper Baby Pants. Huge change, profound pivot. Today, Chris Ballou is in Act 3 of his musical arc, finally writing and producing music under his own name. I sat down with him and he described a few pivot points along the way, but one story in particular has stuck with me. So because I'm also a personal fan of this guy's music, I thought it would be fun to take our time with this story while painting Chris's telling of it with loops and lyrics from all three phases of his fascinating career. Here's Chris Ballou.
Well, we were in Los Angeles to meet with record companies because the Presidents of the United States of America, my rock and roll band, had played a show in Seattle at which there were A&R people from many, many record labels who had come to check out what was going on with our band. I had no idea that the crowd was full of industry professionals, so I just went ahead and did the usual crazy whack show that we used to do without knowing that we were under a microscope, which is a blessing because it worked, and the next day we had, I think, 7 major labels sniffing around trying to sign us.
I can't explain glacial motion while Los Angeles don't drop into the ocean. I can't unfold the layers of mystery or piece together the tragedy of history, 'cause those lucky suckers, they don't have to work. Big 3D billboards and big 30-foot smirks. And everybody wants to be naked and famous. Everybody wants to be just like me, I'm naked. And
one of the music labels interested in the Presidents was Maverick, owned by the biggest pop star in music at the time, Madonna.
So we went to Los Angeles to do some shows, and Madonna came to our show at the Dragonfly, and I remember seeing her in the very back of the room with her baseball hat on and her big sunglasses, and, you know, the classic I'm a famous person who doesn't want to be seen kind of thing, which basically says I'm a famous person wearing a giant hat and sunglasses at a show in the dark at night. So anyway, that was funny, and I thought about calling her out, and I kind of thought better of it because I didn't want to make her feel weird. And the next day we were scheduled to have a meeting with her at her record label offices.
The Presidents were right on time for that meeting, but the biggest pop star in the world was running late. So while waiting for Madonna to arrive, her assistant played them a cassette tape of a new signing
that they were very excited about, named Alanis Morissette. And of course, at the time, it was as if somebody said, oh, we've just signed this band, Baby Jell-O Pudding.
let's just stick a pin in that for now. Comes into play later. So how did the boys burn off all that nervous energy before the big meeting? Well, seems they had
brought along with us a little Nerf football that we used to break out when we'd pull over in the van, you know, at a rest stop or something, just to kind of get our blood flowing. We had frisbees and a little football, and we're throwing it around. And eventually, an assistant stuck their head out of the doorway for the parking lot and said, she's here. We're ready for you. And so everybody kind of files in through this door into this blank hallway that leads to the offices. And I kind of lingered. Maybe a little bit of me was like, you know, Madonna, I'll come when I'm darn well ready. You've made me wait all this time, so I'm going to throw the football kind of around up in the air. I was throwing the football to myself a little bit, and the door was propped open to the hallway. And I thought, could I throw the football into the hallway and then run and catch it myself? And so I did it, and I caught it, and my feet, you know, hit the carpet as I bounded into the hallway, and I felt something next to my left foot. At the time, I had on these very thick leather, sort of 1920s brakeman style boots. And I looked down, and there, trembling, looking up at me, wide-eyed and terrified, was Madonna's dog. Madonna had a little tennis ball-headed chihuahua at the time. And if she was on the cover of a magazine or doing a photo shoot, she always had the dog. The dog was everything to her. She didn't have kids yet or anything like that. And I looked down and I knew the dog because I'd seen it in pictures, and I was millimeters away from crushing the life out of that dog. Come in. Come home. You are welcome. Still wasn't there, and my heart is kind of in my throat, and I'm kind of freaking out a little bit because I almost killed her dog, so I'm shaky. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and I end up standing up and going over to this bookshelf that's got books and albums and various media stuff, and I'm kind of poking around looking in this bookshelf, and all of a sudden there's a tap on my shoulder, and I turn around, and I'm 3 inches away, face to face with Madonna. She had, I think, come into the room and probably said shh to everybody with her finger over her lips, and nobody said a word, and she went right up behind me, tapped me, and then terrified me again. So I had a 1-2 punch of almost killing her dog and then having her face right up next to my face. Finally, we sat down for the meeting. It was fantastic. She really understood what we were doing. She understood that we, while appearing to not care at all, cared deeply about our craft and cared deeply about entertaining people. And I think she kind of identified with that idea and felt really good. As we were leaving, as I remember it, she kind of took me aside and said, you know, you're a really good songwriter and craftsman and entertainer, but you are fun and funny, and I want you to know that you will never get critical respect for your craft because it is fun. So don't expect it. Don't wait around for that kind of validation because it's just not going to come.
Soundwave, smashing. Fly, fast and high together, fly. as I can go. Now I'm laying low.
I feel like she was sincerely trying to do me a favor. So yeah, it felt like a gift. I knew it already, but it galvanized my already existing gut feeling. And in fact, I felt this global distrust of the entire experience that was a byproduct of kind of, you know, nurturing that idea that I don't need critical validation to keep improving my craft and being an entertainer and all that stuff.
So inquiring minds want to know, did the presidents wind up signing with Madonna's label?
We ended up going with Columbia, and in the end it worked out great because Alanis Morissette became Alanis Morissette, and the story of her association with Madonna's label became the story of the label, and we would have been an incredibly tiny footnote to that story. I appreciated Madonna's advice because it was like a warning about that uncomfortable feeling of being saddled with a lot of external forces and external expectations versus your pure intention of making music to make people feel something, whether it's good, bad, sad, happy, whatever. There's a very pure relationship between writing music and performing it for people. And then there's all this other crap. It's like a cake where the cake is the size of a softball and the frosting is the size of a room. And you can't get to the cake because the frosting is too thick. Anyway, it could have gone very different if I had killed her dog that day.
Where is my dog when he's gone? He's doggone, gone, doggone. When he gets back to our cozy little shack, it's doggy where you've been so long.
Casper Baby Pants was really the pinnacle of do-it-yourself. I mean, I did everything myself. One of the major revelations I had when I realized that kids' music was what I was trying to do all along and I needed to really own it and get into it, the first sensation I had was relief that I'd been searching for this voice for 15 years and I found it. And the second sensation I had was freedom from the culture of cool. Having hit singles and convincing others that you are vital and awesome was off the table. I didn't have to do that with that music. All I had to do was entertain people who could barely walk. That was a beautiful thing. That was a way to be successful and be useful and be kind of connected to other people, but have no expectations about critical success or being perceived as hot or cool. So I was just, you know, tepid, and it was wonderful.
Oh, my flea has dogs. My flea has dogs. My little flea has dogs. Little flea, little dogs, little flea, little dogs.
After a great run, drinking from the fire hose of the rock star life for the better part of a couple decades, Chris became Casper, writing and performing infectious earworms for young children and their parents, including more than a few songs about dogs. Wonder where that came from. Finally, Chris moved on to Act 3 of his musical arc. Just since the pandemic, Chris Ballew has released 9 full albums of new music under his own name. It's what you're listening to right now.
Lyrically, I'm writing a lot about the way I perceive the world and reality and physics and spirituality and enlightenment. And babies have that. That's one of the reasons I wanted to make music as Casper for 0 to 6-year-olds, because the 0 to 1-year-olds are like the greatest Buddhas ever. They get it. They see the world as energy and light. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get back to.
I did not know I could float till I fell. Dust myself off and call my bluff. Lean out over the edge and find on the top of the top now. Looking out, all I want are
are sunny days, and all I get is clouds. Find a slice of sky while zooming out. Lose my grip now, the end of me. How am I slowing down? How can this be? Suspended where there is no gravity.
And then there's also this, yeah, it's adult music and it could be participating in the culture of cool. It could get on a hot Spotify playlist or something like that, but I don't require it to feel happy. Metaphorically, I say to myself, I'm making chairs. I'm just making chairs. And I imagine I'm a person who has a job and goes to that job 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I go into my little workshop and I just make chairs. And I just make chairs. I don't sell them. I just make chairs to be in the moment and have a craft and use my hands. And yeah, I think of it now as I'm just a hobbyist. I'm retired. I'm just making chairs.
Did not know I could float till I fell.
Making chairs. I like that. Kind of feels like what I do with this podcast. My thanks to Chris Ballou for sharing that crazy story with me and giving me so many great tunes to work with so I could properly share it with you. You'll find his music everywhere it can be streamed or purchased. From an island in the upper left-hand corner of the lower 48, that's Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt.